Enviro is an award-winning recycling company committed to recycling plastic in a way that encompasses every strand of the circular economy. By merging social impact with technology innovation, we can create a better environment, both for today and for future generations. The Enviro podcast aims to make sense of recycling, and in this episode, we bring together the players in the industry who have ambitions to change the way we recycle forever. We're joined by Steve Morgan, Policy and Infrastructure Manager for the charity Recoup, Beth Green, Programme Director of Enviro, and Lubna Edwards, Sustainability and Marketing Director at Robinsons Packaging.
There needs to be a transformational change in the entire recycling system.
We call it the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Being part of a proven, circular, closed loop is the ultimate objective of Enviro, that it benefits all.
The system for recycling is broken in parts.
The opportunities are immense. If you look at what's happening in the UK, it's a once-in-a-generation event.
So what's the solution? We start the discussion with, sadly, an all-too-common news story. Reports earlier this year found UK plastic waste is being exported to Turkey and then illegally dumped and burned.
I'm Steve Morgan. I work as the Policy and Infrastructure Manager for the plastics recycling charity Recoup. We're a member-based organisation, so cover the entire plastic supply chain from polymer manufacturers to plastic packaging manufacturers, local authorities, waste management companies, brands, retailers, recyclers. There's been some news that has broke recently, and indeed there's been news over the last few months about plastic packaging that's been recycled in the UK, or at least placed for recycling by consumers. It's ended up in uncontrolled waste sites in Turkey. This undermines the credibility of the recycling systems in the UK and destroys some of the consumer confidence that when they take the effort to recycle, their materials could end up going in, you know, ended up in the natural environment. But this is a result of many factors. There's not just one thing that causes this. Traditionally, the export market for plastic packaging has been quite prevalent. So around about 60% of the plastic packaging that's collected for recycling in the UK is exported. And the reason for that is there's just not the infrastructure within the UK to handle that material. So Recoup completed some work last year looking at the reprocessing capacity in the UK. And it is around about 250,000 tons worth of operational output of plastic packaging, and against around about 1.5 million tons placed on the market. So there's quite a bit of a gap. So obviously there's been an increase in material staying in the UK in the last couple of years, just a small increase, but there's still quite a large volume going abroad. And we've categorized this into three categories. So you've got, we call it the good, the bad, and the ugly. So when we're talking about material exports, a lot of it's actually very good. So the materials are good quality. It's been paid for by recyclers overseas. The material can go there. It gets recycled and it's controlled. It's auditable and it's recycled. The bad is where that material potentially could have been recycled in the UK, but it's been exported. It's been exported for mainly because there's better commercial markets there. And the current systems actually a little bit incentivize the material to be exported as well. And then what we've seen in Turkey is the ugly material. This is often actually material that's been exported illegally out of the UK, and it goes into uncontrolled waste sites. There's very sort of low wages that are used out there to sort through material. It's not controlled. And it can end up going into the natural environment. And this is exactly the examples we've seen. So whereas we're at the moment, we're in a position where material, and still a lot of material still goes out to different countries to be recycled, like Turkey, increasingly so, as has happened this very week, Turkey have actually closed the doors on, and they do not want a lot of the material that's coming from the UK. I think other countries might do the same. And this places quite a sizable reliance on the UK developing its own reprocessing and recycling infrastructure, which is actually covered quite heavily in the a number of government consultations that are taking place at the moment. One is around extended producer responsibility. And this is where producers of packaging in that chain. So plastic packaging manufacturers, retailers, brands have to pay into a scheme to ensure that the waste of that material is managed correctly. And the ideal scenario is that increased funding that will go into the system would pay for increased enforcement within the UK to stop those illegal exports and also develop the infrastructure within the UK to manage that material. So there's a number of factors at play here. The future, because of the government consultations, the way it's been seen, shows there's hope for the future. There's a lot of opportunities, but we've got to try and minimise these terrible stories of the material, you know, obviously going into various countries abroad. In this case, it was Turkey.
My name's Beth Green. I work for Enviro. We're a recycling company, startup, recycling PET plastic into pellets for food-grade recycled PET. So as Steve mentioned there, one of the key factors in avoiding the kind of news stories and press releases that we have seen recently with uncontrolled waste, then we have to form part of the solution, be the infrastructure that Steve talked about there. The UK needs to build a degree of infrastructure to facilitate the large volumes of plastic waste that are being consumed and recycled by the public in this drive to retain the intrinsic value of the plastic material, which is, it's in everything that we do and everything that we wear and pick from the supermarket shelves. So while we don't currently have the infrastructure to a level we require it, and Enviro will be part of that solution, we run the risk of not only a risk of the environmental impact of the uncontrolled waste sites that Steve mentions, but there's the brand damage that is going on when the plastic materials and the products are being seen or photographed or picked up abroad with the brands and the large UK brands or global brands that are associated with that. Where Enviro sits is in a particular waste stream of PET plastic. In layman terms, this is the type of plastic that is associated with your food packaging, plastic drinks bottles, for example, food wrapping, and the clear plastic. And what Enviro aims to be able to achieve is the reproduction of that into a pellet form to be used by manufacturers such as Robinson, where Lovner comes in, to be able to reuse that into packaging at a food grade quality as well. So we can keep the value of that plastic from its original purpose right the way through the closed loop system and back into what it was originally designed for, into the food packaging cycle. So that closed loop is where the infrastructure comes in, and we will form part of a wider system, if you like, villages of industrial units that will process all the different types of plastic. Because as Lovner will talk about next, it's not just the one type of plastic like PET that has a high value in the marketplace when it's converted into this rPET or recycled PET, then that holds an intrinsic value and it's recognised globally. Where we have other types of plastic, such as the bottle caps, the PP plastic, that doesn't necessarily have the same value at the end of its recycle process, then we start to have difficulties for the manufacturers, such as Robinson, to retain and achieve the levels of recycled plastic within their products.
My name's Lubna Edwards. I work for Robinson Packaging, a manufacturer of plastic packaging for food, home care products and personal care products. I am the sustainability and marketing director. Many manufacturers such as Robinson have got voluntary commitments to reduce virgin plastic use in packaging, increase proportions of post-consumer recycled plastic in new packaging products. And in fact, we've got a minimum of 30% post-consumer recycled material commitment and ensure all of our packaging is recyclable. And I don't just mean technically recyclable. I mean that it's really, you know, it's actually collected, it's sorted, recycled, and used in new products. And everybody needs to understand, just hear what Steve and Beth have been saying, everyone needs to understand there needs to be a transformational change in the entire recycling system, nationally as well as globally. But how can we make this happen more effectively and at a much higher scale? How can Robinson and our peers in the industry and our customers and the rest of the value chain achieve their sustainability commitments when it comes to circularity and packaging? Well, you know, I think we've really got to move away from thinking of the recycling industry in isolation. It's really about recycling as a system-wide. It's about the entire chain. So every member of that recycling chain working in harmony. So what I mean by that is manufacturers such as ourselves designing packaging that is fully optimized, using just the right amount of material, not too much, not too little. So it's got to be fit for purpose, made with recycled material and fully recyclable. We're that part of the chain. Then our customers, the brands and the retailers who are the next members of the chain, continue to drive their commitments to only use packaging that is recyclable and made from recycled material. So that when the consumer, who is the next member of that chain, recycles at home or when they're out of the home, the local authority, waste management organisations and recyclers such as Enviro within that chain can collect, sort and recycle the material back into high value material, which can be used as raw material for the manufacturers such as ourselves to create more protective packaging. And so the loop continues. Now, unfortunately, the system, and we've seen this just through the Turkey example, the system for recycling is broken in parts. You know, do consumers, for example, understand what they can and cannot recycle? Simple things such as, do we leave the cap on the bottle or off? Do we peel the label off the packaging or do we leave it on? And do consumers actually have the right provisions, the right bins to recycle? Do they understand the need and the benefit for recycling? Are they motivated to do the right thing? Will all local authorities and waste management organisations collect all materials for recycling? You know, household waste collection has got history, you know, some history of success, but is enough waste being recycled? Is enough being used back into new products? You know, certainly in recent times, there's been a significant shortage of high quality recycled plastics with prices that have absolutely gone through the roof due to supply and demand issues. But why is that? Why is that happening when the UK are producing plastic waste, a lot of plastic waste that can be recycled and used in new products? So from a recycling infrastructure point of view, we really need to maximise the utilisation of our current system, but we also want to see an investment in growth and growth in domestic recycling. We should not be exporting low quality waste and importing high quality recycled material. Why not invest in our own domestic recycling system? Which is exactly why we need organisations like Enviro to make this happen, to really help us move away from this sort of old take, make, dispose model to a circular model that keeps high value materials in the cycle for as long as possible.
What's interesting is the engagement of the consumer around the concept of the deposit return scheme. Because I know, Steve, you've been looking at the different ways to engage on the consumer level, to incentivize and motivate, as Lubna said, the consumer into recycling that bottle or that piece of packaging in order to retain the value of it and see it all the way through a closed loop cycle back into a new item. I know you're looking at the digital deposit return scheme potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the backdrop to this is we complete a household plastics collection survey each year, which means we go out to every single local authority in the UK to understand what plastic packaging they collect for recycling. And around about 60% of plastic bottles in the UK are collected for recycling, but 40% are not. That's quite an astounding figure, I think, in today's systems where you've got, you know, extensive curbside collection schemes. If you look at drinks containers separately, so if you look at natural HDPE milk bottles and PET drinks bottles, then that rate increases to around about 70%. But a lot of the reason why that those rates are relatively low to compare with what you might want to be seeing is the away from home consumption and disposal of those materials. So, you know, in recent times, obviously, with the pandemic, there's been a lot less away from home consumption going on. But the assumption is that, you know, when we go, you know, maybe a year's time, we're going to be back at maybe pre-COVID levels again. And the away from home recycling schemes needs to be dramatically changed. And this is where a deposit return scheme can really make a difference. So there's a couple of schemes that we could mention here. One is a traditional deposit return scheme, where it's called a return to retail. So you take your PET drinks bottles, it could be aluminium steel cans, again, all based around drinks in glass containers, back to a retailer who will then give you a deposit back. So that could be a financial reward, for example, 20 pence, or it could be, for example, a donation to charity, or even to enter a lottery. You can gain money that way. Now, the issue is with abroad, these schemes have been tremendously successful, but they've often been brought in when curbside schemes have not been prevalent or in place. So this changes the dynamic for the consumer. So they would have to then take their drinks bottles, instead of putting them in their recycling bin at home, they would have to take them out of the home and take them back to a retailer. And that's fine if you're out and about on the go. So that ticks that box. But consumer convenience is a really key important part of this. And this is where the potential of a digital deposit return scheme could be very impactful. So this would mean that when you're at home, you would scan the label of your bottle and you could place that in your recycling bin at home. And then through the app and your phone, you would obviously gain the reward, the deposit. Now, this asks all sorts of questions about the technology to do that in terms of the labeling, the systems that are needed behind that, and also the quality of the material as well, because the material, instead of going into what's called a reverse vending machine, so it's separated from all non-drinks bottles, this will be placed into your standard curbside collection schemes, whether it's a bin or a box or a bag. So this is something that's going to be explored over the next, I think, the next year. We'll start to see some really good data around what is the potential for a digital scheme. But at the moment, the live government consultation about introducing a deposit return scheme into England, Wales and Northern Ireland, whereas Scotland are pushing ahead with their own scheme, although that is subject to a separate impact assessment after the results of the pandemic. So they're obviously looking at timelines and how they can apply a scheme in Scotland, maybe in relation to the rest of the UK, instead of pushing on with their own ahead of everyone else. They should reduce littering of those items and increase recycling. And whether it's by a traditional DRS scheme or a digital DRS scheme, that should be our end result. It should be a successful scheme. It's just the case of how it's delivered in the UK. It needs to be resolved.
Carrying on from what Steve has said, fully support all his comments. You know, the deposit return scheme is a super mechanism to help solve these challenges. It helps reduce litter. It helps create that financial incentive for people to value plastics and recycle more. But it also helps us because it will generate higher quality material, higher quality, cleaner material. But as Steve alluded to, there's so many complexities and interdependencies to ensure that, you know, we can design and implement a successful DRS. Many unanswered questions or questions to be answered, you know, which packaging products really will be in scope? Is it all drinks or is it just packaging on the go? Will it be collected through a manual scheme or reverse vending machine or both? Probably. I'm also a firm believer of conducting trials to see what works for us in our nation. DRS schemes have been very, very successful throughout Europe, but simply replicating what's done in another country into, you know, our nation will not necessarily work. While we can take lots of learnings from those experienced in that area, and we've got to avoid these piecemeal reforms, ensure that all interventions You know, all the different pieces of legislation that are upcoming are aligned to achieve the intended outcomes, not unintended consequences. It's really about solutions for the future, not just focusing on solving problems of the past. Plastic is really a highly valuable material. In fact, there's no reason why plastic waste shouldn't be seen as the source of its own material. You know, plastics, you know, for generations, it's helped save lives, it's protective, it's lightweight, it's got a low carbon footprint, especially when you compare it with other materials. Waterproof, shatterproof, hygienic, it's efficient to manufacture, it helps extend shelf life of food and products. It really is a sustainable solution. But society at large has turned this solution into a problem. And plastics has kind of become guilty by association with it being dumped into the environment instead of being properly managed. It's kind of become a victim of its own success. And, you know, plastics in the oceans is plastics put in the wrong place. And when we talk about value, you know, if something holds value, people, you know, will look after that. And plastic does hold a high value. People wouldn't throw away a £10 note because it's made from plastic, because they understand the value of that. However, unfortunately, some people do litter plastic bottles or metal cans for that matter, when it's not just about plastics, because they don't see the value of it, or maybe they don't put it in the right recycling bin because they don't see the value, they don't understand the value of it. So we, the industry and the government, have got an obligation to help engage and educate consumers about the value of plastics. You know, we do need better infrastructure for the whole plastic circular economy. We, you know, as an industry, there are fiscal drivers and mechanisms led by the government, as well as our own voluntary commitments to help better manage plastics and the handling of it, really going beyond business as usual. The problem isn't plastics, it's about how we handle plastics, how we under, or society undervalues plastic. So government and industry need to take responsibility, but actually consumers need to take responsibility as well. There is, you know, this inconvenient truth that, you know, plastics don't litter by themselves. People litter, or maybe it's a lack of infrastructure. You know, we've seen plastic bottles and metal cans littered, as we've seen many cigarette butts littered. But now we're seeing face masks littered, and it really, really is unacceptable. So we do need better consumer engagement. We need to raise awareness. We need local governments to better enforce zero littering rules. But, you know, we also need to understand that plastics has a high value and it needs to be managed appropriately. Plastics has been on the agenda, high on the agenda, particularly since Attenborough's Blue Planet, which has changed society's attitudes and perceptions. But we need to change their behaviour and action too. From a manufacturing point of view, of course, it makes sense for us to reduce the amount of plastic we use in packaging. That just makes good business sense. Too much packaging is a waste of money and resources. It's about using the right amount that's fit for purpose. So if, you know, people understand the value of plastics, then I think it will be managed much, much more effectively.
What the kind of opportunities the infrastructure partners such as Enviro would see from a active and successful deposit return scheme would be, such as Lubna alluded to, that clean source of material to process through the manufacturing process and out to our consumers, which would be the best quality recycled plastic, and ultimately to be able to get that to a grade where it would sit at a food grade level. The DRS, what we also see is that engagement from a consumer perspective as well. So it brings the whole process into a level that the consumer can understand. They can physically see their efforts coming through, all the way through to the end product, which they'll pick back up off the shelves, and they'll see that that product is at the very minimum a 30% recycled plastic packaging, and they can feel that they were part of that all the way through. Where does Enviro sit in with DRS? It's absolutely fundamental in forming part of a circular economy for a closed loop system to keep our waste within our nation and to process that in efficiently as possible, to not hike prices, as Lubna alluded to earlier. There is a high value associated with the recycled product at the moment, and that is being driven by demand in the marketplace and from abroad. So we're importing that product at the moment to meet our needs. We know there's enough material out there. It's been proven that there's enough material within the nation itself, and it's now about giving consumers options on the way that they return their packaging back into the system, and then seeing the end product of that. Technology plays a huge part in that, in consumer engagement, in the engagement of the deposit return schemes, in the reward systems that we agree on. I think the challenge now is, whereas Scotland is just slightly ahead of England, Wales and Northern Ireland at the moment in defining how that's going to look, we can learn lessons from that and be part of that to make things as efficient as possible. But I think the big brands could also take the advantages of potentially advertising associated with the deposit outlets, such as the big retailers as well. They could take advantage and have marketing schemes which boost not just their own brand, but also encourage people to return their plastic bottles or glass bottles or the aluminium cans to the one central source, which is easy and convenient for the customer. So for us, our key benefit is the clean product that comes into the manufacturing process, but it's the being part of a proven circular closed loop that is the ultimate objective of Enviro with part of this, but it benefits all. I don't think we've talked about the specifics of the plastic tax coming in April of next year. That, I think, it obviously has a major impact on the manufacturers. Lubna, you'll probably tell us a bit more about that. But it will drive, from a government-led driven perspective, the use of recycled material into new products, and to a very high percentage. 30% is a big target for your average plastic bottle or washing up bottle, shampoo, yogurt pot. And there are some real challenges in achieving that while we still have gaps in the infrastructure loop. Lubna, I think you've got particular challenges from your perspective in incorporating the 30% recycled plastic into your products.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned our sustainability commitments before, and actually the industry, the plastic packaging industry and the value chain, you know, have had these voluntary commitments for some time, way before the tax even came to play. So we've been working hard for a long time, many years, to design for recyclability, use high amounts of recycled content while ensuring that the packaging remains fit for purpose. So this is not something new, but of course the tax is another driver to help achieve the desired outcomes. You know, we produce plastic packaging products in the UK and Europe. They're actually already made with up to 100% recycled plastic, which we can do, for example, with PET. But in the UK, we are also high users of polypropylene in food packaging. And recycled polypropylene at food grade level does not yet exist, which prevents us from being able to use a minimum of 30% recycled polypropylene, or PP, in our food packaging. So there's a real tension there between legislative requirements and voluntary commitments in trying to increase proportions of recycled material while making sure that we meet our food safety requirements. So like I say, you know, we've been working on this for a long time to achieve circularity in packaging, you know, which is all great, because if you can do it, it means the tax is not payable. However, in those instances, for example, trying to use recycled polypropylene in food packaging where that's just not possible because we can't meet food safety requirements, you know, manufacturers will have to pay the £200 per ton, because that material is not available, or there is no solution for us to meet the food safety legal requirements back into food packaging. And that's a significant problem right now. We're trying so hard to resolve. The technical solution does exist, but I go back to that recycling system of, you know, designing for recyclability, working through the value chain, the consumer doing the right thing, there being the right infrastructure to collect and segregate a clean stream of recycled material so that it could be used back into high value packaging. You know, businesses along the chain, from ourselves as manufacturers to customers to retailers and to consumers, will unfortunately have to absorb some of that tax. That being said, you know, we have been working on this for many, many years in terms of increasing our use of recycled content. The tax is, you know, one of many ways of driving that outcome.
It's an interesting one, the tax, because certainly from an environmental point of view, it's a great driver because it's a commercial driver. And I was expecting that the tax level per tonne to come in at something like £800 or something like that to really try to gain as much revenue for HMRC as possible. But I think the sensible decision was made to go in at £200, because there is many items at the moment where technology cannot deliver the results for recycled content that Lubna mentioned around the use of polypropylene, simply because there's too many non-food grade products in there. So you have a mix of non-food grade and food grade products for polypropylene, and it doesn't meet food safety regulations. It's a very difficult one. So there's a situation that will, it's going to happen where certain companies and businesses will have to pay the tax because there's no obvious technology or solutions to their issues around including recycled content. But there's also another part to this, that around about half the plastic packaging we use in the UK is imported. So there are many claims around recycled content, which in the many cases they're absolutely right in honest and true. But there's other situations where either by accident or deliberately, those recycled content claims cannot be substantiated, and they might not be true. So this places a great emphasis on businesses to look at their audit trails and try to make sure as best they can provide all due diligence that the recycled content claims that if the materials come from a third party supplier are actually true. And what Recoup have been and others have been asking for is HMRC for is the implementation of a recycled content verification system. So almost a simple system where everyone knows the rules and the standards, there are consistent ways of reporting and auditing, and that should, in theory, stop falsified claims of recycled content getting into packaging. But discussions are ongoing with HMRC at the moment around this, but we could see a situation because of the administration and auditing costs that maybe the companies actually doing the right thing and getting high levels of recycled content into their materials actually pay more in terms of their auditing trails, administration requirements, and then they actually end up paying more than the £200 would have cost them in the first place to pay the tax. So it could lead to a rather perverse outcome financially. And we're already seeing examples of where those costs could come into quite significant figures, and it could really disadvantage UK businesses. So that's something we, as Recoup, are pressing HMRC to develop, and discussions are ongoing regarding that.
I think, as Steve has talked about, in terms of the challenges that come, and I mentioned earlier about the fact that there are certain materials that do not allow us to use recycled material because it contravenes food safety requirements. So some manufacturers will have to pay the £200 per ton, and it will have to be absorbed between ourselves and the value chain, and could be ultimately reach the consumer. But I have to stress, you know, the intention of the tax should really be to drive innovation in recycled materials and packaging, absolutely. But I also think the government's got a significant role to help us achieve the outcomes intended by the tax, to help us achieve high amounts of recycled content and help us solve these problems that we're faced with. For example, our attempts or our challenges and our desires to use recycled PP in food grade packaging. The government has got a significant role and responsibility to enable us as manufacturers to help us increase our use of recycled material. And it goes back partly to making that transformational change in the recycling system so that high quality recycled material is widely and commercially available for us to use and not leaked into the environment. So in terms of paying the tax, you know, Steve has so eloquently explained how, you know, the sort of the approach of the tax, but also some potential unintended consequences. But at some point, yes, you know, we will along the chain have to absorb that tax money. But our primary commitment is to design for circularity, design for increased proportions of recycled material, and design products that are recyclable. As I mentioned earlier, the tax is one of many drivers to help us achieve that.
I mentioned at the top of this podcast that we currently specialise in the PET stream of plastic recycling, targeting food grade product at the end of that. But the PP plastic that Lublin mentioned, which forms a very integral part of many mixed plastic products that you see out there, such as the caps, bottle caps on the top of the recycled bottles that were coming through. So what Enviro would do is look to incorporate within the facilities planned throughout the UK, it's a facility to recycle this second stream of plastic material. So we would be able to take advantage of at least the first wash line level of the manufacturing operation in order to diversify the amount of plastic that we could process within that. But there is a role for infrastructure such as ourselves to tackle all types of plastic and make it an affordable product for the manufacturers to put back into their new products. We, as a company, have joined with partnerships such as the Protos site at Ellesmere Port, a brownfield site, where we have joined with other companies on a close location with a large sorting facility within the location, which means that we can partner with other recycling manufacturers within the same location to hand off any plastics or other materials that we find within, or contaminated materials we find within our feedstock or the plastic that arrives at our door, and we can hand those over locally to other manufacturing streams. And that notion of a single site recycling all the different forms of packaging to facilitate or demonstrate the cycle and the closed loop system. So Protos being one part of that up in the northwest of the UK, of England, but we've also seen that in action up in Scotland as well. So there are examples at Levetsey, for example, where they have all the different streams working within one site to process all the different packaging and hence bringing the cost down, particularly of transportation, because you're transporting air at the end of the day when you're moving around large volumes of compacted plastic packaging and even more so with glass and metal. The weights involved in the transportation of that means that we are wasting carbon energy by moving things across large distances in order to facilitate the closed loop or the circular system within the single country. So we're looking to form part of bigger recycling villages such as we have at Protos and up in Scotland at Levetsey. And we think that is part of the future. You mentioned there that what does the vision look like? We think the infrastructure part of the closed loop does look like a large, close-knit ecosystem of different manufacturing parties working together to produce a product at a low cost for UK manufacturing companies to produce and meet all their obligations that we've all talked about within this. And that bigger vision is something that we certainly are part of and we want to see more of across the country, and to be supported by the government in that through the use of grants, which Enviro have been awarded such a grant in the Northwest region, which is really beneficial for companies like ours getting to a situation where we could become productive faster. We do see some benefits coming through from a government level, but it needs to be wider and it needs to be accelerated in almost to in order to meet our targets and prevent the export of our own waste out of the UK. As far as how optimistic am I about the future of recycling, I'm really enthusiastic about the amount of support and national support that's behind initiatives such as the deposit return scheme and the concept of a closed loop recycling process or concept for this country. I think I've never been involved in something at this level that has had the level of public support that this concept has. I think the media at the moment, although they are the window for much of the public to see some of the negative sides of where our waste has ended up, they are also keeping the topic up at the very heart of discussion at government level, at a community level. So we've seen a real surge, and that is for me where I can see the benefits coming from, and that public support is something that I think will give the whole project real momentum. It's now about the logistics of getting this up and working. It's not about having to convince anybody of the benefits that this will bring to not just the whole environment, but also a local community level as well. So that's where my enthusiasm comes from, really, is just talking to people and getting the support and hearing the support we have for this.
The opportunities are immense. We could be sat here with no government consultations taking place, lack of investment in recycling infrastructure, and you know, companies like Enviro and Robinson not having the fantastic sustainability credentials that they're actually developing and going to be involved in the future. So if you take a step back from everything, and sometimes the negativity that surrounds like the material that ends up in Turkey or Malaysia or whatever it might be, if you look at what's happening in the UK, it's a once in a generation kind of event almost. What Beth alluded to before about collaboration, they're setting up obviously a new facility that needs partners as well to develop it and to make sure that it maximizes the obviously what the facility can produce. And that's something that's quite common in the industry at the moment. But you know, for all the positivity, I think generally about where we could be going, there's got to be some words of caution as well. So we're looking at extended producer responsibility. There's a lot more funding coming to the waste and recycling schemes at the moment, and the infrastructure. It's got to be put into the right places. As obviously Lubna mentioned around food grade polypropylene, is a huge technical challenge that needs to be overcome. There's some solutions that are needed there. Of course, there's plastic films in flexibles, which are collected by very few local authorities at the moment. But the government consultation is pushing those to be collected from businesses and households by 2026, 27. There's all sorts of opportunities around increasing recyclability by design. So this is where, you know, sometimes you look at an item of packaging and you wonder why it's been made that way when it cannot be recycled. There's all sorts of opportunities to create a recyclable item, so change the design of the packaging. But also we've got to make sure that we're not designing out of plastic packaging just to get out of plastic. We've got to look at the overall environmental test. So the overall carbon and environmental impact of that product. So sometimes I've seen examples where a perfectly good recyclable item of plastic packaging has been changed in its design to go to maybe another material or another type of format, and actually that cannot be recycled. It's got an overall increased level of carbon impact on the environment. And the overall result of that is a poor and probably unintended outcome. So we've got to just be careful about what we're doing over the next couple of years. And I think there's a fantastic opportunity for companies like Enviro and Robinson and Recoup to work together to share information and build those collaborative approaches that we're all wanting to see. I'm very excited, but there's some words of caution there.
I'm really, really excited to be part of this sort of generation of change for good. I am enthusiastic. I am positive. We have to make transformational change. Business as usual is not an option. And we're all aligned. And I think from a manufacturer's point of view, you know, working on these challenges to solve these challenges is really giving us, you know, that ticket to entry into the market. It's almost become a license to operate. Unless you are in, unless you take a seat at the table, you'll end up on the menu. You only have to look at the latest Greenpeace report to see what can happen. So, you know, we want to make this transformational change. Our customers want it. Our employees want it. Our investors are demanding it. Our consumers want it. We are all aligned to make this change. I think it's really important. You know, Beth talked about, you know, carbon emissions, as did Steve. You know, I realise the topic is around recycled content. It's around recyclability. But we can't work on that in isolation. We really need to look at the other social and environmental impacts together, because there is a balance and we don't want to create those unintended consequences. Steve mentioned some examples. And as a sustainability expert, I still profess that climate change is the biggest environmental threat that we face. So I am optimistic, absolutely, because we have no choice either. We don't have a choice, and everybody understands that. And I think it's really great because collaborations such as working with Recoup and Robinson, you know, are members of Recoup. I'm a trustee of Recoup. And of course, partnering with Enviro is going to help us get there and help us create those transformational changes that really are needed. You know, certainly one of our commitments is, you know, for Robinson is to really drive that shared commercial value and income streams beyond our current business models, you know, collaborating with our customers and other partners to sort of regenerate those local economies, those sort of local economies that Beth talked about, for example, at the protest site, that are not just looking at the plastic circular economy, but actually looking at the whole ecosystem from a social and environmental point of view. So absolutely optimistic. There are so many moving parts to this. And I think, like Steve mentioned, we've got to be very cautious that we don't create any unintended consequences. We all want to work for organisations that are sustainable in all senses of the word, that are future-proofed, you know, for good. And like I say, many of our stakeholders are demanding it. Really, really excited to be a part of this.
For more information and podcasts, go to www.enviro.co.uk.